Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. This is part three of our four-part gift from Matt Wallace, The End of Flesh. If you are new to our podcast, please go back and listen to parts one and two. This episode is not work safe or kid safe. It has some very disturbing scenes in it. Now, on to our story. The End of Flesh, part three, by Matt Wallace. After a shootout and a close encounter with a butcher knife, Pax has a new clue, but it will take him into the deepest, darkest heart of the Carrion underworld, Necrophagiac. Will you follow?
The End of Flesh by Matt Wallace. Part 3, Necrophagiac. It was a long day with no leads, and Pax just wanted a shower and a shot of anything. He checked in with Vine. They had nothing on Councilman Brillo. The year before, there was some bribe-taking scandal with the sterilization board, but it was a dead end. Pax hadn't come up with anything new on his own, either. He was ready for a couple hours downtime before he hit the streets again. Then Svitter texted him on his PDA. The message was short. He said he finally had something for Pax and Svitter wanted to do it hand to hand. After another drive uptown, another hike up 13 flights of stairs, even Pax's brain was sweating. He pounded on Svitter's front door and waited. "Svitter!" Pax yelled through the wood and corrugated iron. There was no answer. He beat on it some more. "On the door, Svit!" Pax waited. Nothing happened. It didn't happen so quietly and for so long that he started to get paranoid. The door was too heavy to kick in. He'd need a ram to open it. Or the electronic skeleton pick he kept on his keychain. Pax took his keys out, flipped the tooth on the little silver pick, and slid it into Svitter's lock. A silent green light let him know the pins were tumbled. He slipped the keys back in his pocket and turned the lock. One hand gripped the doorknob, and the other reached behind his hip and drew his .45. He threw the door open and went in hard. Nothing jumped out at him, and nobody was waiting. Svitter was laid out in the middle of the room like a medical experiment, splayed and half-gutted. They'd gone at him raw. They even went looking for a good case of gout in his organs. Real bottom feeders. And they were still in Svitter's apartment. It was the smell. Pax hadn't caught movement yet, but that carrion feeder smell he'd come to know was alive inside the apartment. Then the curtains behind Spitter's hack nest shuffled and Pax caught the glint off the sheet blade of the meat cleaver. "Police!" Pax shouted at the curtains, 45 angled and ready to ruin the fabric when he heard a second one break cover behind him. Before Pax could turn, the buzzer grabbed him to try and lock his arms around his body, but Pax got a hand under his jacket. He found the rounded grip of his snubby and pulled the trigger twice, putting holes through the back of his jacket. A bullet in the buzzer's lung and another lodged between his third and fourth ribs. The one packing the meat cleaver sprang out from behind the curtains, all leather and tattoos and Svitter's entrails and a bushy red beard as he rushed Pax. At the same time, Pax kicked out, sending meat cleaver's balls up into his body cavity. That stopped him dead and threw off the angle when he swiped with the cleaver. The blade opened Pax's inseam, giving his thigh a 6-inch smile. The pain made him drop his hand from under his coat, coming away without the snub-nosed revolver. He dropped to one knee and used that hand to snatch up his .45 from the blood-soaked carpet. Pax raised the sights and squeezed the match-grade trigger. At close range, it shattered the window behind Meat Cleaver without ever knowing it went through him. The slug became a permanent part of the wall in the building across the street. The load was hot .45 super ammo. No good for rapid firing, but that didn't matter. You only needed one. Meat Cleaver ended up sprawled next to Svitter. The way the 45 opened them up, they looked like twins. Pax turned around. It hurt to move. His leg was burning all the way up into his toes, where the blood from the gash had already streamed down and soaked them. Meat Cleaver's partner was hacking up several small pieces of lung in his own gravy. He had another 30 seconds, tops. "You'll be all right," Pax assured him. "If I call it in right now, so give it to me. Who called you for the pickup? Who deaded him?"
"Don't know."
Pax's estimation was off by about 10 seconds. He found a soiled towel and jammed it in his pants, trying to staunch the bleeding. Pax knelt down and rifled Meat Cleaver's pockets. He didn't find any ID, but there was a slip of paper, black ink scrawled in the hand of an illiterate child. It was the address of a John Paxson, his address. Pax was supposed to be the second course of the night. Their skin work told a story, too. Meat Cleaver had a girl's face inked on his biceps. Long pointed nose, long pointed chin, lots of facial hardware, pink hair modeled into stalactites that hung off one side of her face. Underneath the rendering it read, Jenny plus KB. Pax assumed that Meat Cleaver was KB. KB and his friend both had chemical brands burned into their sides. Pax knew the mark. It was a logo. A Haitian Loa and a skull hunter playing patty cake. Pax felt bad about Svitter. There was a difference between a maggot and a ghoul. Svitter was just a maggot, and Pax wasn't sure if there'd ever been a choice in the matter. He bellied up to Svitter's hack nest to find whatever Spit had texted him about. The system was locked, probably the last thing he did. It was passphrase protected. The tech could probably crack it, but that would take time and there'd be a paper trail. Pax tried the old standby. Soylent Green is people. The monitors lit up. A voice recording sped back. Don't try and spoof the alpha dog, Zag. The same jazz as Svitter's digitat, but not the same passphrase. Pax found he was feeling less and less sorry about Svitter meeting his end. He took another shot. To serve man is a cookbook. Eureka for a second time. Pax clicked through Svitter's most recent online activity. There were a bunch of messages going back and forth between Svitter and another hacker. Apparently Alpha Spoof didn't have the skills to backtrack the email from that chef. He had to call in a solid from some burner with the handle Koto. He couldn't give Svitter any user info on the chef, but the email definitely originated from a cafe in Holland. So someone emailed Svitter from Holland, then flew to the city and ate Donald Barillo? How did that track? It didn't, but he'd save it for later. In the meantime, Pax crumpled up the slip of paper he found on KB, his death warrant, and stuffed it in his pocket. Then he called the whole mess in. Twelve hours later and Pax was sitting in a long black limo parked by the curb outside the gates of Marble Cemetery. He had to badge beat six drivers before he found the right one. Beyond the gates, the procession was just letting out. A lot of black ties and black dresses, a lot of people who never met Donnie Barillo but who wanted to meet his father. While he was waiting, Pax helped himself to a scotch and soda, and a phone call. The little ringing bell icon on his PDA screen shook for almost a minute. Then a new window opened up, and the only face Pax ever greeted with a smile these days was there returning the favor.
"Hey, kid," Campbell Hoffey said brightly.
Hoffey had 10 years on Pax and about a million more gray hairs. Still, he looked healthier. On the force, guys joked that the Chinese stayed so well fed by cooking their spare relatives. It was hard to laugh at gags like that when you carried Pax's particular caseload. "What do you say, Camp?"
"Oh, you know me, Pax. I got no wisdom for anybody. Hey, how's my good luck charm working out for you?"
"Saved my life last night. Didn't work as good for the other guy."
"Yeah, that kind of luck seems to run one way, doesn't it?
So what's up? You still got that CI's number? Ghoul you popped toward in Tenderloins?"
"Probably dig it up. Why?"
"I need to know where Necrophagiac is setting up tonight."
"Telling me you can't get that yourself?"
"Yeah, well, I got slowed down a little last night and some bodies canceled my main guy's subscription to Life magazine. Don't have the time or the land speed to chase down somebody new."
"Everything all right, Pax? The refresh rate on this phone ain't so good, but your voice has timbre like a lumberyard."
"Old story, Hoffy. Getting older every time my screen lights up."
"You need some help? I mean more than a couple of phone calls worth."
"Not from an old fucker like you." Hoffy laughed.
"All right, kid. It's your world now. Can you come through on the other thing? Hoffy nodded. I'll have it for you after lunch. Thanks, Camp. Campbell was right. Pax could have chased down the info he needed himself. Maybe he called Hoffy so he wouldn't be alone, at least for a little while. But he couldn't bring Hoffy in, and he wouldn't anyway. Instead of thinking on it, Pax opted to finish his drink. Outside the limo, the Bereaves started to disperse. Pax spotted the Barullos, their entourage, bodyguards, PR people, but all he really saw was Rose. Her councilman daddy would be a while glad-handing, accepting condolences and requests for favors. Rose left him to it and made for the gates, then for the limo door and the back seat where Pax was sitting. Their hips practically touched before she noticed him next to her. John, I'm not a man of faith, Rose. He only stumped her for a second. Well, they say you gotta have it, but I don't know. I don't believe in God, I don't believe in Santa Claus, and I don't believe in coincidences. What's wrong, John? After we talked, after you came to see me, I had a real bad night. A guy I knew had an even worse night. And that's my fault somehow? Who'd you talk to? About what? What I told you about your brother's murder. A lot of time and money were spent last night trying to kill me and my investigation. Who'd you talk to? Are you involved? In Donnie's murder? Are you involved? No. Then who'd you talk to? No one. Why'd your brother get eaten? Eaten? Who'd you talk to? No one. She didn't get outraged. There was no how dare he accuse her. And she didn't weep or wilt. She just got hard. It was that more than anything that made him back off. It made him respect her. And tough broad. If it didn't come from you, then they're burning the trail. You're part of the trail, you and me. I got a move to make. You stay visible from now until we talk next. Don't go anywhere you're not alone. Don't run with anyone you haven't known since you could crawl, got it? What are you going to do? Go to a party. Necrophagiac was the name of a floating carrion rave in the maggoty crotch of the cannibal underworld. Hell on Earth. But Pax didn't have time to sit in his car steeling himself. So he dug a deep hole in the back of his brain and buried everything he had to accept about the situation there. He'd go in alone to see the Dirty Dirty, the Sick Fest, to see fetishes they hadn't come up with names for yet. He'd blow right by these things with a smile, with a wink that said he was into it. Because if he interfered, if he even swallowed the wrong way, it'd be the butcher's block, and the third or fourth course of the night would be him. Pax footed down the street in leather, a metallic vest, and scummed-up hair. From outside the mesh and razor-wire perimeter, the salvage yard looked like nothing more than junk corroding quietly in the dark. But Pax spotted a couple of hoppers slip through the fence and ferret into the maze of crap. He followed their lead. Inside, a path was beaten through the industrial jungle, narrow and winding. Absinthe glow sticks lit the way. 2 dozen yards into it, Pax heard lightning and a hell shriek. He jerked his head towards the sound. A rat scavenging in the junk had gotten itself fried. The mounds of scrap were electrified to deter scalers from going over it. Pax had to take the path. He had to walk right through the front. On, and he started to hear the music. The death tech they blasted at the rave. Louder and louder until finally he reached the tail end of a long freak line and saw it. An archway. Necrophagiac spelled out in tiny arms and legs across the top. He was pretty sure they were doll limbs. Pretty sure. The bouncer working the gate was draped in skins, new leather. He sported a face full of knockoff Maori tattoos and the Wendigo, inked across his chest in bloody calligraphy, a real tribal fixation. It was a lot like uptown white kids with Chinese characters penned in their flesh. The Wendigo was backed up by a security quintet swilling cheap vino, flamethrowers slung across their chests instead of rifles. If there was any trouble, why ruin good meat when you could douse it in wine and give it a light grazing? When it was his turn, Pax rolled up his sleeve. That looks fresh, the bouncer said of the chemical burn on his forearm between the Loa and the Skull Hunter. Both were bright red. We like fresh, Pax said.
You just be careful. Scent like that attracts all the wrong kind of business. Unless that's what you're looking for. Just came here to meet the girl of my dreams. That set the bouncer off laughing. Big scary gut laughs. Pax slipped past him. It was all going down at a dirt clearing. A huge cul-de-sac curve of the scrapyard's great wall of crap. 300 bodies that ran the gamut from fresh to 3-day-old jammed together. The smells that converged created their own nexus of foul. A dead line of chicken wire ran around the clearing, leaving a 2-foot no-man's land between the party and the electrified scrap mountain. Here they worshipped the mad cow, a bastardization of El Chupacabra, the Mexican goat killer. It had the big Deadpool eyes, but instead of the razor mouth, there was a long pink-capped snout with a ring to the septum. Crimson banners hung all over like some Animal Farm Reich. Pax remembered the cows. As a kid, he'd seen some of the first ones drop, while on a trip through farm country with his old man. They were wheeling by a fenced-in pasture, and a big piece of prime Montana beef grazing by the post suddenly went all herky-jerky. It twisted and writhed and leapt up onto two legs. Pax was only 5. He thought the cows were trying to dance. He thought it was funny. Then he saw it again, and again, and again. After a few million times, it stopped being funny. When they torched the last cow on an offshore quarantine, Pax had just about forgotten how to laugh. Then the disease jumped species. The whole raid was pointing towards a dais made on a rotting Camaro flatbed. A butcher's block rose from it. The body of the poor bastard strapped down there didn't spasm with every whack of the knife. He was a long time gone from feeling it. They harvested these from fresh graves, made backdoor deals with coroners, with ambulance techs. Most of this one's thighs were gone, his calves, hands shaved of tender fillets. The butcher, tall and wearing a surgeon's mask with plastic vampire teeth glued to it, carved up the abdomen, killing tools suspended behind him like bars on a macabre wind chime. Once the meat was cut, he slapped it onto platters and creep chic flop girls carried it around the clearing. There were trash can cook pits, and there were those who liked it raw. Some even brought their own picnic. The PD could raid Necrophagiac every night if it really wanted to. But to what end? It was contained. It was freaks and carries feeding on the dead and forgotten, a necrotic cultural zombie subsisting on its own infected flesh. It was only after some Manhattan suit's kit got grabbed off the street that the bosses got nervous. The PD, the mayor, the governor, everyone too far outside the world Pax lived in to consider. And that's when Pax got paged. Got the call to bust the table before Middle America was faced with a mess. Pax came across a group of doom chasers from DeKalb Avenue sitting around two industrial spools chewing fresh adrenaline glands. On top of each steel disc were bowls filled with the baby slug-looking things bobbing in a viscous syrup. Secretion juice dripped onto the chasers' pretty gang colors, running down the cannibal Holocaust tableaus painting on the leather of their sleeveless doublets. "Say, man," Pax yelled over the music. "I'm looking for some of my freaks. They run with KB, you know them?" "We're your freaks, white meat," one of the doom chasers, alpha male type with alligator eye contacts, said. "Sit," he commanded. "Have a chew." Alligator eyes scooped a yellow tinted gland from one of the bowls and held it out. Pax shook his head and kept moving. The flesh mechanics were in full swing, plying their trade, putting on floor shows. They had wires stuck into the skulls of John Doe coma patients smuggled out of Mount Sinai that afternoon. The ravers siphoned their excited endorphins through intravenous feeds, getting off, falling off, getting it on. They had a phantom limb band all rigged up, severed arms filled with more magic wiring. The arms dangled from the frames of electric guitars and hovered over a drum kit. When the mechanics flipped a switch, they played Mary Had a Little Lamb. They played the Star-Spangled Banner. Sidestepping the stagger procession of a zombie cult, Pax bumped shoulders with a jackal goth wearing a shawl. A feet shawl. Feet as in fetus. Usually animal, but not always. He and his 3 friends looked like demon barbers from Canal Street. The jackal goth held the end of a leash. The leash was attached to a collar. The collar was attached to a kid. 12, maybe 13. A Casper kid, pale and wispy as a ghost. Track marked, already a junkie. Runaway, probably. The kid had VEAL written across his forehead with India ink. Pax couldn't let that shit slide. His better angels became shrieking harpies, beating their razor wings against his brain. "Got that $100 you owe me, cocksucker?" Pax said before he dropped Jackal with a forearm to the throat, solid exposed radius snatching the air right out of the Goss' body. His friends just stood there. The end of the leash fell to the dirt. Pax kicked the Casper kid in the ass to get him moving and he scurried into the crowd. It probably wouldn't make any difference at the end of the night. He was another half hour circulating through the rave, and just when he thought the steak was going to suffocate him and the sights were going to melt his eyeballs, Pax spotted Jenny of KB's tattoo fame. She was sitting on a piece of junkyard art, drawing blue and red and green hits from a bong. There was no mistaking the likeness. Pax had the zip strip half run up his sleeve. Before he was even sitting next to her, he threaded it around both their wrists and pulled it tight to lash them together. "I'm not into that shit, fuck meat," Jenny said. "Shut up," Pax ordered, jamming his snub-nosed revolver against the outline of her ribcage. "I'm a cop. You need to walk out of here with me right now. No gab." "You got a head full of maggots pulling this shit. You here alone? Man, you're candy. They're gonna lick you off of their fingers tonight." "That won't matter to you. You make a fuss. You see how I got this muzzle angle? Brown will up through your rib cage, tear across your heart, end up somewhere south of your cerebellum." Pax dragged her off the yard decoration and started hauling her through the crowd. He hadn't pushed her through 6 feet of bodies before he stopped. "Shit," Pax muttered. The bouncer from the front gate. One of the ravers must have tipped him. Pax had asked too many casual questions, repeated the same name too many times, and had a face no one recognized. The Wendigo was combing the rave with a couple of necrophagiacs' house ghouls, and they'd spotted him too. The bouncer pointed at Pax and Jenny with the fend end of a machete from across the dirt clearing. "You!" he yelled into the music. Heads turned towards them. "Cut me loose!" the girl harpied at Pax. "Cut me fucking loose, man! I don't want to get torn up too!" "Then you better run with me," he told her. "Now!" He pulled Jenny into a fast break that quickly became a kamikaze run. But they didn't dive bomb towards the front gate. Pax emptied the cylinder of his snub nose into the air, the shots ringing loud even as their reverb was crushed back to earth by the pounding death tech. He hacked a path through the crowd, straight at the bouncer and his ghouls. The Wendigo wasn't alarmed or even surprised. On the contrary, he smiled and raised the machete in his hand just as Pax kicked in the bouncer's chest like it was a door to be taken down. Same mechanics, same force. But he wasn't a door, and without any hinges to stay the inertia, his body went flying. The edges of his boot heels snagged the deadline, sprawling him against the scrap heap. It was a Frankenstein experiment gone wrong. Crackles of current and sparks bursting from the joints of rusted machines. Supercharged metal fried the Wendigo right down to his bulging eyeballs. In under a minute, every piece of pink flesh was scorched black. Bloody magma cracks circled his torso. His hand fused around the handle of the machete, its wooden grooves catching fire and sparks shooting like a torch from the end of the blade. His leather straps became part of the epidermis, and his face swelled and swallowed every blue ink vein of tattoo. When the electrical current had enough, a regurgitation of yellow sparks spat him into the dirt. At first, the ravers were like little kids jumping up and down under a 4th of July night. They delighted in the sparks and the screams. They whooped and whistled and waved their arms. Then something else happened. Gradually their arms came down, the cries and catcalls died away, the constant chaotic motion driven by the blaring death tech music ceased. That stillness, contrary and frightening, wrapped Pax. But no one looked at him. They'd all forgotten about Pax. It was the smell, the blood, the cooked flesh. It saturated their senses, seeped into their brains. It spelled out two words like a black incantation that turned man to beast, a past word that unlocked a root program, the primitive base matrix from which all mammalian psyches are constructed. Fresh meat. The demon frenzy filled every empty soul, wafting in the waves of body heat that swept the clearing. It took absolute possession. Pax witnessed the deadly de-evolution from vulture to velociraptor, saw people become wild things, thought he saw their fire cast shadows over the spoiled earth morph into shapes with tails and maws and eyes set on the front of their heads. They fell on the bouncer, clawing and moshing to peel the first, the meatiest strips, gnashing their teeth and growling territorial growls. Not the mournful moans and dead-eyed mechanics of zombies. This transformation was inhuman on a new and different level. Pax didn't stick around to watch, didn't wait for them to turn on each other. He pulled Jenny tight to his chest and moved her around the undulating body of the crowd, pistol whipping anything that came too close, anything with teeth. And he didn't stop until they cleared the rave, the gate, the winding maze to the juice scrap heap, everything that bore the taint of what was happening back there, everything but the night. Your boyfriend, KB, he hired out for a carrion hit, maybe two. I need to know whose tab he was running. Jenny sat side-saddle in the front seat of his car, her wrist zip-stripped to the window frame. "So talk to KB about it," she said. I did. It was a real short conversation. Pax peeled the necrophagiac brand off his arm and slapped the strip of synth skin across the roof of the car. The skin underneath, the real stuff, itched. Jenny watched him. "You're that cop everybody on the scene talks about," she said. "The busboy, the PD's cannibal killer. Clearing the table after the freak feast, right?" "Yeah, me and Davy Crockett's legends in our own time. Tell me about KB and the hit." At first he thought she was going to give him more lip, but in the end she just looked tired, defeated. Pax saw that a lot working these cases. KB and his brother Jab, some uptown suit hired them out. Jab didn't want any part of it at first, but KB's always been the ambitious type. "That's the guy I want to know about, the suit." Jenny looked at him hard. "This has something to do with the kid, right? The councilman's kid. The papers didn't say anything about the Carrie Canny scene, but I saw the pictures." "Just tell me about the suit." "Man, that's all you care about, isn't it? You suits. Him. You. It's the same thing. I bet it isn't even about the kid. Just shitting yourselves thinking if some big shit's brat gets put up on the menu, maybe it'll wind up pixelated on a Newsweek.com, that they'll start hypertexting about what's really going on in the outer boroughs." "Either way, the job's the same," Pax told her. "My sister got poached, you know. Got sent down the soup bone pipeline to Shy or Philly or wherever the fuck. So where were you then, huh? You gonna be tax man for the zags that did her too? Hey, you wanna tell a story, I'll get you a real attentive audience. I'll throw you back to the fucking dogs. Every ghoul in that rave saw us leave hand in hand, and soon as they finish burping up that bouncer, you can bet they'll start remembering. You wanna be around when they achieve recall, huh? Who's the suit?" "I don't know." "You don't got a name, give me something, anything. Sight, sound, smell. You got 5 senses, Jenny." "How the fuck? Think, goddammit." Jenny fell quiet. Pax watched her try to get her head straight, digging deep. She believed he'd feed her to the necrophagiac. "The suit. He said under the Dutchman was the beginning of flesh, the true beginning of flesh." The Dutchman. The phrase rang in Pax's head like a child's nursery rhyme, pinging the curves of his frontal lobe for recognition. When it came, the series of thoughts that led him to a conclusion went off like shape charges in his head, one after the other, building to a final collapse. He took out a Spyderco Horus and thumbed its curved-beaked blade. "All right," Pax said, cutting the zipstrick. "Get out of here. Lay low for a while." Jenny rubbed her wrists, at first afraid to leave the concealment of the car, then all too eager to get away. "Your sister," Pax called after her. "What was her name?" "De jure," Jenny said sarcastically. "The fuck you care?" She clomped up the street in her big combat boots. Between the Clydesdale footfalls, Pax heard a much smaller sound, like sniffling, like wiping away tears.
Thank you for listening to The End of Flesh, Part 3, by Matt Wallace. Check back with us in 1 week for Part 4. To find out more about variant frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like variant frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
It's something I don't really like to talk about. But I understand that it's important. And, well, you know, she stopped reading. And, she just stopped reading. And then after that came the drugs and, the loose men, as my aunt likes to call them, coming around all hours of the night when she should have been reading. And then she left, and I haven't seen her. I got an address. I think she married one of those loose men, and I hope he's tightened up since then. And, I have to do the intervention. I have to send her a copy of The Next Fix, because I'm hoping it will scare her back into reading. If the drugs and the whores and, you know, everything did not scare her enough, The Next Fix should show her what she's missing and should hit her in the jaw hard enough that she'll never stop reading again. So if you have someone in your life who stopped reading for any reason, you should get them The Next Fix, because that will jumpstart it. And I think we're all going to be a lot happier come the new year.
Consider this promo a controlled substance. Only one drug can bring the visceral and the sublime together in a single trip, where the best and the worst of the human drive boils down into a techno-art concoction that's half street-level heaven and half the fiery beauty of hell. From Matt Wallace, Parsec award-winning author of The Failed Cities Monologues, this is The Next Fix. Kick back to the strains of Earth's Last Top 40 as the final human DJ sends a shout-out over The Last Frequency. Step into the hard-boiled beauty of the Lusting Corridor, where that which once escaped a man is met again. Tool up with a lone cop who polices the terrifying carrion underground of the future as you seek the end of flesh. Experience one of the most unique and captivating imaginations in fiction today, collected for the first time anywhere in print and featuring 12 original stories and one full-length novella, The Next Fix by Matt Wallace.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from I Should Be Writing and Playing for Keeps and a bunch of other stuff. But I just wanted to say that Matt Wallace is big like Bear. He is smart like Bear. And he writes like Bear. Scary stories that roar at you and make you look for the closest tree to climb. Maybe if you roll over and play dead, The Next Fix won't bite. Maybe.
Matt Wallace serves up two-fisted literary action, if of course your fists are half-cybernetic, the size of ham hocks, and covered in broken glass.
Hey everybody, J.C. Hutchins, author of the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy here. Matt Wallace is the boogeyman in your closet. He's the monster under your bed. He's the shadow that slides along the walls. Matt Wallace's writing is so compelling and so terrifying that you'll keep turning the pages, addicted to his work, questing for the next fix.
You order your copy today in limited edition hardcover from ApexBookCompany.com. Are you ready for the next fix?
In a world where evil supervillains run amok and corrupt superheroes care more about their hair than justice, one woman is caught in a web of manipulation. Keepsie Branson just wants to run her bar. She doesn't want to think about her old dreams of being a superhero or her tired ambitions to save the world. But the facts remain that Keepsie and her friends have powers too, and they will soon be needed as Seventh City falls into chaos, and no one knows who are the good guys and who are the bad. Playing for Keeps is a free audiobook from Mer Lafferty, available at playingforkeepsnovel.com.
something new from audiobooks.com.
In a future where noir, cyberpunk, and visceral horror make mind-bending bedfellows, the only thing that separates a forsaken urban sprawl from a half-finished technological utopia is 16 miles of river. They're known as the Failed Cities. Two worlds populated by shadow agents, street soldiers, reluctant detectives, and femme fatales. When a single conspiracy touches them all, the story can only be told in their voices. Ethan, the street preacher. Truck, the hot-rodding neo-hipster, Knifesmith. The Feral Twins, whose passion for death and each other is the only escape from their own tormented psyches. Just a few of the characters that drive one of the most unique storytelling experiences in fiction today. J.C. Hutchins, author of the Seventh Son trilogy, calls the Failed Cities monologues gritty, imaginative, believable. T. Morris, author of Moravi, says the Failed Cities monologues creates a chilling tapestry of inner darkness that finds its outside voice. It's not a matter of wanting to listen. You have to. Visit audiobooks.com to hear the series that's redefining the rules of podcast fiction. Variant Frequencies presents The Failed Cities Monologues by Matt Wallace. 8 lives, 2 cities, 1 story.
Get this book and more free titles from audiobooks.com.